What's really happened is that Black athletes have regained even more power now. And they found their way again, where now Black athletes are saying, I'm going to get money regardless. And so now you're going to going to hear and feel what I believe.
Welcome to Black Tea. My name is Milena Williams.
I'm Andre Demise. If you're new to the show, thank you for tuning in. This show is the one where we have the difficult and sometimes uncomfortable conversations in Canada's Black communities. And the way the show works is we talk about what made us happy this week, then we talk about a topic of importance, and then we spill some tea at the end.
But before we get to all the juicy stuff, let's talk about what made us happy this week. Andre?
Okay, so it's actually not going to sound like something that's very happy this week, but it made me happy. I'll get into it. So first of all, I saw a story, I think it was in the Washington Post, that there was a FedEx driver. His name was Timothy Warren, and he was driving his truck through Portland, Oregon, and he was going through a neighborhood when all of a sudden some white dude comes out of his house and starts screaming at him he's going too fast. So the FedEx driver, Timothy Warren, stops his truck, and he's tired. Like, he's had a full day of delivery. He tries to explain to this white guy, Warren's Black himself, that, you know, he just wants to get done with his work. And the dude starts, like, screaming some racial slurs at him and then takes a swing on him. And what happens? Warren swung back, tagged him on his forehead, and not only knocked him out but killed him.
Yeah.
On the punch.
This is a great thing that makes you happy. Thank you so much.
No, it makes me happy that
I know.
The prosecutors declined to charge him, but it makes me happy because it's an object lesson in don't start none, won't be none. Hood rules apply. Second story, again, the theme here is don't start none, won't be none. A missionary, his name was John Allen Chow, hops on a boat, gets a friend to take him to this island called Sentinel Island, which is like in the Bay of Bengal, like off the Indian coast between India and Burma. And there's a tribe there, the Sentinelese people. And they were like decimated by contact with British people. You know, so there was thousands of people living on this island, and then British people show up, and now it's only a few dozen. Wonder why. So he goes there, and what do? They fill him up with arrows. They lit his ass up. Don't start none, won't be none. Some of y'all really have to understand, drink your water, mind your own damn business, nothing to happen to you. This FedEx driver's driving through the neighborhood. Somebody stops him, tries to f*** with him, couldn't mind his own business. What happens? The dude lick out Tim Ross. The man dies, okay? Mind your business.
People were going in on Twitter.
This dude goes to the island. What do? They lit his ass up, filled him with arrows. And in case anybody's listening to this and you feel upset about, Andre, this is a missionary and you're a Christian. Why would you say something like that? You're a Christian too. Well, guess what? If this dude had brought some sort of disease that he had time to build up an immunity to over to this island and kills off the remainder of the people on the island, how would you feel then?
Just to bring it back to Christianity, one of my favorite media personalities who hosts The Friend Zone, his name is Dustin Ross, and he has pinned to his Twitter profile a really important actual verse. Don't start no it won't be no Proverbs 26:17. So
Shout out to Dustin. Shout out to people who mind their business. What made you happy this week, Mel?
Well, I can't start with talking about a man because... I mean, there's two things. A man's obviously one of them. But a friend of mine said that she listens to the podcast and that my dating life seems really exciting when she knows that it's not. I just wanted people to feel sorry for me.
Yeah.
So, like, it's not exciting.
I will never feel sorry for you.
You should.
Okay.
So we're going to start with the fact that obviously Lion King's getting remade, which is going to be incredible. The trailer came out. And we can't forget that Aladdin is also being remade because the legendary Will Smith is playing the genie. But you know, there was a tweet that really spoke to my heart about Aladdin specifically. It's just things that, you know, I understood as a child and I understand now. So not Damar tweeted, Aladdin said he could show Jasmine the world and that was poor. Listen, I knew. I was like 8. You break into my castle. Like, what? I'm good. You broke in. And then OMG, the fabulous OMG said, and she fell for it. That's why you gotta ask to show you something up front. Listen, this is really important. I've always been about Jafar. He had the receipts. When he did that remix to Prince Ali and he said, not who he see. Like, that was that was a banger.
Yeah.
I was on Tinder because I got really bored on Saturday. I like funny people. Like, I don't like people that are like, hey, how are you? Mm-hmm. Would you like to go for dinner with me? Like, I don't want to go for dinner. Okay? I don't.
Anybody who
you're
says
boring.
That, you automatically have to assume.
Leave me alone.
There's a picture in their Tinder profile of them holding up a fish.
But there's like 100 normal women that would have dinner. Like, no, don't do that to me. So this guy was like, big D or big heart.
Okay.
And I was like, this is dope. Like, big D. Sure. Because people can change. And first of all, if you think you have a good heart, you probably don't. Anyway, it's going great.
Where it comes to sports and athletes themselves, there are a lot of preconceptions that come with the territory. And this is based on tropes that mostly come from 80s movies because we'll tend to think of athletes as being not so smart, being uninterested in what's going on in broader society. But that has never been the case for Black athletes. So it's a bit jarring to hear when white pundits on television and radio, for example, tell outspoken Black athletes like LeBron James to shut up and play. So here to walk us through the intersections between athletics and activism is Sportsnet host and writer Donovan Bennett. Donovan, thanks for joining us today.
No, thanks for having me. I don't want to walk us through it. I want to ask you guys the questions. You guys are the experts. I'm normally interviewing people, so I want your perspectives.
I feel like I'm being interviewed all of a sudden.
I know.
This makes me feel great. Okay, so...
Just flip the microphone back on us.
You know more than me about this, so I just wanted to know if you could give us some background about the links between Black athletes and Black civil rights activism.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not something that started 2 years ago. I think it's around 24 months now when Colin Kaepernick took a knee and actually before that sat throughout the national anthem. First of all, it's crazy that it's been going on for this long. We're still talking about it, even though Kaepernick is no longer in the league. Mm-hmm. But this is something that predates him, whether it's Tommy Smith and John Carlos at the 1968 Olympics, Muhammad Ali risking his career and his freedom, standing and not wanting to be a part of a war that he felt didn't really stand with what he believed in or what his religious beliefs were. Whether it's guys like Bill Russell or James Brown or Jesse Owens, if we want to go even farther back, and how his excellence did his talking in the face of the Nazi Germany regime. Black athletes have always stood for something, even if it was just being able to play. And Jackie Robinson saying, well, I'm going to not only turn the other cheek when I'm called things, I'm also going to turn on a fastball and hit it out of the park.
Yeah.
Black athletes have had to stand for something because it was the only voice that prominent Black people had. This was before Black music was widely consumed on mainstream radio and television. This is before someone like Oprah could come into your house literally every day.
Yeah.
So that perspective had to come from somewhere, and it had to come from Black athletes because they had a platform. They had a microphone in front of them, and they needed to use their power literally for good. So what's really happened is that Black athletes have regained even more power now, and they found their way again, where there was a generation where the powers with the money that some athletes could make, and thus it made it a difficult decision whether or not they were going to speak up. Now Black athletes are saying, I'm going to get money regardless. And so now you're going to hear and feel what I believe.
So what do you make of, for example, the Laura Ingrams of the world that talk about athletes being paid to dribble a basketball? You know, when they say to athletes that they should shut up and play or keep the politics off the field, what do you make of that?
I mean, it is hypocritical because she's not telling Bono to shut up and sing. It's easy for people like that to tell Black athletes, stay in your lane, mind your business, when really this should be everyone's business. They're just bringing it to you so that you can no longer deny that it's an issue. But there is a slave mentality when it comes to athletes and often
I absolutely
Black
agree.
Athletes.
I think the NCAA is one of the largest plantations that's being run in North America.
There you go. And it's funny, LeBron James has a documentary.
Shut up and play.
Yeah, that one. But he also has one called Student Athlete about that very thing, about the fact that NCAA athletes don't have rights and they're making a lot of money off of their physical ability for white people. Sounds pretty similar to slavery. And so people have a pushback to that because, wait a minute, these athletes are playing a game and they're making millions of dollars. And slavery obviously is horrific and systemic. But the point is to show that these athletes are providing a good and a service, but they're not being valued as human beings.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They're not being allowed to bring their authentic self to the workplace. They're just supposed to do their job, be happy that they have a job, and make someone else, lots of money. Mm-hmm. Even though these athletes are millionaires, the guys who are employing them are billionaires. And even let's look at the term owner, right? The term in the dynamic of Mark Cuban is an owner. Yeah. Jerry Jones is an owner. What are they owning?
These bodies.
Athletes. Yeah. And they also want to own the message that comes out from these athletes. And so that's why when people make the reference to slavery, that's what they're referencing.
With the ownership, I want to know how you feel about, because a lot of people think that things can change if we have more Black owners of teams. I've heard things from like Diddy and LeBron, and like people even think that about like we need a Black police chief, which we obviously don't. How do you feel about that? Do you think you can change a broken system?
Yeah, well, I mean, representation matters,
does
certainly.
It?
I think it does. Mm-hmm. I think you need to have a voice in the room and a voice at the table. I don't think, but Adam,
for the record, they will never let a Black owner into the NFL, ever. This is not going to happen.
What about the NBA?
Well, we have Michael Jordan.
Yeah. Michael Jordan is a Black owner, but there's a different dynamic there between the NBA and the NFL. I would say that the NBA is probably the most progressive major sports league, besides the WNBA. Mm-hmm. You know, it's progressive in the sense that players have a lot more power within the NBA's contract system than with most other sports. The NFL, I think, is probably the most restrictive.
So do you think that there'll ever be Black ownership in the NFL that's substantial?
Well, when Diddy and Steph Curry were trying to combine to own the Panthers, thought it would have sent a good message. I thought it would have been smart. And if there was a Black owner, I think you wouldn't have issues where the owner of the Texans, Bud Adams, is saying, well, we need to keep the inmates in the asylum.
Right.
Right. You're not saying that if there's a Black person of consequence in the room. So certainly there's a difference, you're right, between NFL owners and NBA owners. And I think that that difference is important. When you look at the fact that NFL owners come from generational wealth, NBA owners are often entrepreneurs. They've made their wealth, whether it's from tech startups.
Like Steve Ballmer.
Steve Ballmer, Cuban, Vivek Ranadive. These are guys who have been at every level of companies. They've interacted with people at every level of companies. So there's a level of humanity that is different from someone who is a trust fund baby. Mm-hmm. They're just
We can't teach the trust fund babies diversity and equity.
Well, some of them, because, you know, if we're going to call out the ones that are bad actors, in my opinion, we should give credence to the ones that aren't. You know, the Johnson family who runs the Jets said, if there are any fines for our team, we're not going to pass that on to players. We're going to pay them. Mm-hmm. We feel our players should be able to speak their mind. Jed York, he abstained from the last vote around having rules around the anthem. So the NFL tells you the vote was unanimous? Yeah, because Jed York abstained. And he said, listen, if we are going to ask our players to respect the anthem, then why are we selling concessions during the anthem? Right. Why are we selling merchandise? So as a club, we are no longer going to sell concessions during the anthem. But I also don't believe that we should be putting this pressure on our players. He's the owner of the 49ers, the exact place where Colin Kaepernick and then Eric Reid first took a stance and how this conversation started. So some of them certainly you can. I don't think we should necessarily paint with a broad brush, but it's a lot of old money. It's a lot of old boys club. Mm-hmm. And if we want to look at it, it's a lot of people who have given money to the Republican Party.
Yeah.
And who's the leader of that party right now? Donald J. Trump, who has made this very issue a talking point because it plays well to his base.
Yeah.
Feeds right into his nationalist ideas and right into all the same tropes that he's run with over the last couple of years about making America great again, when the real issue is America has never been great for the families and communities that these players are trying to represent.
So what would happen if a Black player protested during our Canadian national anthem? Would the results be different than the United States?
It's interesting. I've thought a lot about that. And I actually, you know, after Kaepernick, when I went to university games, I saw some university players in Canada kneeling during the anthem. And I found
word?
That.
I never heard about that.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a big story because it was university football in Canada. I know when I hear the anthem as a Canadian second generation or first generation immigrant, my association with it is different. I kind of get goosebumps watching my grandfather sing it at a sporting event because for me, it represents him coming to a new country with grade 3 education in the hopes of his offspring being able to go to university, which is what happened with me. Okay. So for many Black Canadians, that's the experience and the association. for many Americans, the experience is years and years of slavery. And although that's part of our history in Canada mm-hmm. as well, it's not as exclusive. Things are not perfect for Black Canadians. Certainly, there isn't. But I think we do have a love-hate relationship at times, where in America, it's often just a hate relationship. I also think the branding of the way our politicians talk about our country. In Canada, most of the time, our politicians yeah. talk about the border is open, Canada being inclusive and diverse.
As long as they're not Doug Ford.
Even though, yes, exactly. Even though it's not always the case, at least they talk about the ideal. Where in the United States, they talk about America being the best and yeah. people being lucky to be there.
Shining light on the hill.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think how the branding from the top down changes it. If a Black player protested the anthem in Canada, I think there would be certainly a lot of pushback, but I don't think it would be to the same degree as it is in the United States, because I don't think we necessarily hold the flag as an embodiment of what the country is. To us, when we think about the country, we think of ideals and values. And, and for Americans, when they think about the country, they think about their military first and foremost
yeah.
and what that flag means in their history. However, I think the conversation would be totally different if an Indigenous person, if someone from the First Nations community decided to protest the anthem. Then I think that changes the conversation.
So what do you make of athletes like P.K. Subban, for instance? He had some difficulties in Montreal, and I think a lot of that had to do with the color of his skin. Mm-hmm. You know, he gets traded to Nashville. Once he arrives in Nashville, I thought this was kind of presumptuous for Canadian sports writers to ask him whether he was going to kneel, and his answer was, well, I would never kneel. You know, I can understand where that's coming from, but it's also like, bro, you know, read the room. Or somebody like Karl Malone, who's basically just one of those, you know, those pull your pants up ass old dudes, while he's out here doing dirt and having like a bunch of children by a bunch of different mothers and doesn't claim responsibility for any of them, is then telling Black youth to, you know, take responsibility for themselves and maybe these police will stop killing us. Like, how do you talk to people like that?
Well, tell me how you really feel. You're not leading the witness at all. No, I mean, with PK, there's one thing. He is, and his answers are, a direct correlation to the culture within the sport that he plays. Mm. And he certainly knows...
A culture within the sport, like the Penguins, for example, who will go to the White House, you know, with Donald Trump's invitation.
Exactly.
But the Philadelphia Eagles won't, because they know they shouldn't be there.
Right, exactly. And so the culture of his sport is extremely conservative. It's again, something that he's had to...
It's also very white.
...deal with. It's white. It's yeah. a cross that he's had to bear. I do feel like PK knows how any other answer would be perceived in that sport. I also feel at times that there is a undue and unfair pressure on every Black athlete to be extremely socially active in a way that is not the case for the other white athletes in the same locker room.
But that's our identity. There's a lot of things that we have to do because we're Black.
Yeah, but if you don't have expertise or an interest... I think it's actually harmful for you to speak. Not that you should just play your position, mm-hmm. but I think if you feel called to speak on something, then certainly you should. But if you don't, I don't feel like you should necessarily do it just because you're Black. Because I think actually you would end up, if you're speaking uneducatedly, doing more harm than good. We don't necessarily ask white athletes in the same locker room, well, you got to speak on everything.
We don't ask white people to do anything.
That's true. That's true. well, going back to Laura Ingraham, she would never say to a white athlete, well, you're talking about diabetes or cancer.
Yeah.
Just shut up and
But
and
if they did, they would be seen as the best diabetes and cancer activist in the world. That's what happens to allies when they speak on race.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I understand what you're saying, but a lot of the time with this whole expertise piece, that's true, but it's also we're all experts on our identity, aren't we?
I could kind of understand where he's coming from. Because remember when Tiffany Haddish was asked, after she won her Emmy, she was asked about diversity in Hollywood,
and she said, I don't know anything about that. I know it, I'm being a joke.
Yeah, and it's like, I can understand why she said that. Because a lot of people
were
like...
He could have said that, though. He didn't.
Yeah. Well, he didn't. He was like, I would never kneel.
Exactly.
I don't agree with the tone of that. Because he didn't say, I'm not an expert in this, so, you know, I'm not the one to ask.
He just didn't care.
But he didn't say, and which is the difference between him and someone like Malone... He didn't say no one should ever kneel. Mm. He said I would never kneel, which I think he's within his rights to say. He's done lots of charitable things. He has a box where young youth interact with police. So that, if that's his expression and the way he feels comfortable helping, then I'm not walking in his shoes. I don't want to tell him what he should or shouldn't do. As far as Malone, his comments to me, it kind of sounded like old school Cosby. Like where Cosby was lecturing young black youth. And then when you pull the curtain back, we're like, yo, dude, what have you been doing for the last 25 years? And so
shot over a piece of pound cake.
Yeah, and what have you been up to, bro?
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, Malone, who you mentioned, you know, his own personal story, plus, I mean, the fact that, you know, his greatest moment as a Los Angeles Laker, or most known, was, you know, hitting on his teammate's wife before the playoffs. Like, there's a lot of things that he's done that have not been a good look. So I don't really care to hear about him speak about anything, really, other than the pick and roll with John Stockton, to be quite frankly.
Word.
Okay, so you were also a college athlete and spent 1 year in the States before you went to London, Ontario. And I just want to know about your experiences as a black college athlete. Did anything happen there that informed your career choices and how you study the intersections of sports and race?
Yeah, well, I mean, in Canada anyways, my experience as a black college athlete was one of the only ones. Like, there just wasn't a lot. I actually am really happy to
You should tell the audience what sport you play.
I played football in Canada in university. I went to Western.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to now look at the sidelines and the
fields. And Western, by the way, is just, I went to Windsor.
Okay.
You know, and Western, to me, always came across as just one of the most racist institutions.
Yeah, I got ran out of there.
In Canada, yeah.
Yeah,
like the campus culture there is incredibly anti-black.
See, I had a good experience, but I also am aware that I may have been sheltered
by the fact that
I was a football player and I had a built-in community on the campus. But certainly at the time, you would be looking at other teams and you could count the amount of black guys on each team, and some teams there weren't any. Mm. And that's not the case. There's no team now that doesn't have black guys. There's no team that doesn't have a bunch of black guys. I mean, Laurier's whole football team looks like the University of Miami at this point. But the real experiences I had, and again, I was transferring from school in the United States in Buffalo, Canisius College, to Western. The real experience I had were outside of sports, racially, was just in London. And I remember first being in town, and, you know, I would just do the obligatory, you know, nod to a black person that I saw on the street. You know, our version of the Jeep wave, I suppose. And it's like I was just nodding my head like I was a bobblehead for no reason. And it wasn't reciprocated. So, like, there was a lack.
Wait, they wouldn't nod back at you?
No.
That's a fight, bro.
And I was
like, you got to take him out after that.
Well, just maybe growing up, you know, in and around Toronto and then going to Buffalo, maybe it was just an expectation that didn't, you know, travel down the 401. So that was the first thing that I noticed. But the other thing is, you know, I was there for, you know, 4.5 years, and I probably was pulled over around 15 to 20 times to the point where by the end of my time in school, I would only drive like through like subdivisions and back roads and not main roads. Sometimes, you know, my sticker would have been out of date or I had a taillight that came out. But other times it was just asking me questions.
Yeah.
But when the questions were answered with, I'm a university student at Western, all of a sudden the energy changed.
Yeah.
And then if I happen to be wearing a Western football hoodie or hat, the energy really changed to the point where one police officer said to me, well, why didn't you tell me you were a Western football player? As if I was supposed to say, hey, I'm a running back, it's all good, and then be able to go down my merry way. It just was the first real reminder for me that I am more than just a person to other people. Yeah. I am a label. And whatever they have going on in their life, that label changes. So if someone has a good experience with the University of Western Ontario or with football players or has a respect for the program, they automatically perceive me as a certain way, regardless of who I am. A story I tell often when people ask me about my current dealings with races. So you guys see me right now. This is an audio experience, so you guys can't see me, but I'm dressed relatively casual on my way to
First of all, he came with the proper dress code because he's wearing a Toronto Raptors jacket.
Yes.
You know, with the shirt on. It's a denim jacket with the Raptors insignia on it.
Right.
You know. Yes. I'm not sure what t-shirt you got underneath that. I'm assuming it's also Raptors apparel.
No,
so
it's
you
just
came
a normal tee. But yeah, but I've got my sports clothes on. I'm relatively casual. But sometimes when I come to work, if I'm going to be wearing a suit, I'm like, okay, I'm just going to wear a hoodie and sweatpants and just be comfortable and then change in the wardrobe room that they have here for Sportsnet hosts. if I happen to do some errands and maybe go to the mall before work, when I have the hoodie on and I have the, you know, the Nike sweats on, the treatment I get at a store or at a mall, I'm followed a little bit. I'm asked, hey, can I help you, sir? Especially because I have my hoodie up because, you know, the head needs a garage. So I always have the hoodie up. But if I go after work and I'm suited and booted and I got a nice suit on, a nice tie on, the energy is way different.
Completely different.
Right? Yeah. And so that's a reminder to me that even though some would think I have, you know, a respectable job and, you know, I know that I'm someone who's a contributor to society. I pay my taxes. I don't break the law. Some people automatically perceive me as something else based on the costume that I happen to be wearing and not who I am as a person.
Any final thoughts?
My last thought would be, where do we go from here? The thing that gives me optimism is that you guys are having this conversation, that it becomes more and more in the consciousness, that I get texts and emails from my white friends who are outraged about the hidden language about Black athletes, about the narratives and the slants about Kaepernick and LeBron James when they do things. And you're right. We do need allies because us talking about this to each other over and over and over again is important, but it only goes so far.
Donovan, thank you so much. We really appreciate your knowledge.
My pleasure.
Now it's time to spill the tea. Andre, what's your tea this week?
Before I say anything, what I'm going to need you to do, if you're listening to this podcast and you're under the age of 40, I'm going to need you to go and get your parents. So you can go text them the link to this podcast and then text them again to give them the time cue where we start the tea, or you can drop it into the family group chat, whatever you want to do. Go get your people so they can listen to this. If you're over 40, good. I'm glad you joined us. So as I spill this tea, I'm going to need you to resist every urge to turn off the podcast and go back to watching CP24 or whatever, because I know that you've got that 24/7 fear and outrage playing in the background while you cook dinner and tidy up the kitchen. Please stop scaring yourself for a second and just listen. Okay, y'all who I'm talking to right now, you are messing up. You are messing up big time. And when I say you're messing up, I am saying it with a love, because I know a lot of you just want the best for your family. You want the best for your kids who are in grade school or middle school, wherever they are. I get it. But you are flopping the show for everybody. And I'm going to tell you why. I know a lot of you voted for Doug Ford or voted for the PC party. And I've seen these conversations in Facebook groups. A lot of your sons and daughters have been tweeting at me or messaging me to ask how they can talk some sense into you. And I know that you say that you voted for the PC Party of Ontario because you believe that, you know, they are going to lower taxes or help Ontario do better in business. Doug Ford and the Conservatives do not save taxpayers' money. They do not reduce debts. I don't know where you're getting that from. If we took this back to when Rob Ford was mayor and Doug Ford was a city councilor, city user recreational fees increased under the Ford administration, meaning that you possibly, you could argue this, you might have paid less in municipal taxes, but then you turned around and had to spend more money to send your kids to swimming classes or your summer soccer programs. And this whole idea that, you know, Ford saved $1 billion at City Hall, that's been debunked by just about every single news outlet, except for the obvious one where you can find a bikini model on page 3. So, you know, this whole thing about saving money was not true. You say you hate the idea, for example, of paying a carbon tax. Well, guess what? You did have the option of not paying a carbon tax if you voted for anybody else besides the PC party. We had the option of not paying the carbon tax. We took the only market-based option for reducing carbon emissions off the table, and we have to reduce carbon emissions. The original idea of cap and trade, which was what we had before, that was created by a conservative attorney that worked for the George H.W. Bush administration. Cap and trade was a conservative idea that was pushed by conservative politicians to find a way that manufacturers could not only build profits by retrofitting factories and inventing technologies to reduce emissions, but they can then sell the pollution that they were not producing to developing countries while those countries were incentivized to build their own clean technologies. But because Doug Ford might as well be the kind of dude to spell mine as well, like M-I-N-U-S, well, he didn't know the difference, or he was interested in selling you on the idea that you shouldn't know the difference between cap and trade and a carbon tax. So forget about the fight with Justin Trudeau for a second. Remember how mad you were about the gas plant scandal costing Ontario almost $1 billion? Do you know how much the cancellation of the cap and trade program is going to cost Ontario? $3 billion. And what do you think is going to happen when these companies who bought the carbon credits decide that they want to sue the government because they're holding basically worthless investments now? It's going to cost them more. Three gas plant scandals in this guy's first month in office, and you don't say anything. And then his government cancels the sex ed curriculum, and I know you all love this one because you cannot stand the idea of a lesbian premier flaunting her lifestyle and making your kids learn all about it. And I know that's because you say this stuff to me and act like I'm supposed to keep it cute. You know what's been happening in schools while you're busy burying your head in the sand and pretending your kids don't need to learn about sexuality and gender identity and all this weird stuff that creeps you out? Them kids are committing suicide, and they're succeeding. Ottawa Public Health this past summer came out with a study that said one out of every nine students in Ottawa, one out of every nine seriously considered suicide in 2017. And more than 1,300 kids tried to kill themselves last year. Out of those young people who tried to commit suicide, 60% said that they wanted to turn to somebody for help, but they didn't know who to go to. Over half of LGBT, lesbian, gay, and bisexual students in a study that was conducted previously, this was back around 2006, over half said that they think about suicide. In 2010, 40%, so 47% of trans youth, and I know that a lot of you are going to want to pretend like you don't know about any of this trans or gender identity stuff or whatever, but they're your kids too. They just don't talk to you about it. 47% of them had thoughts about suicide in 2010. Half think about suicide. And 19% in the year before the study was done had attempted suicide. So basically one in five trans kids will try to kill themselves. You think this curriculum is so disgusting and it's such a violation of your rights as a parent. And the thing is, I know you haven't even read the curriculum because every time I talk to one of y'all about it, the first thing you want to bring up to me is this whole anal sex thing. Why are fourth graders learning about anal sex?
That it's safe.
But they're not learning at fourth grade.
I know, but like that's their whole issue.
Right. Whether it's safe to talk to them about it or not, or whether anal sex...
But whether or not anal sex is safe is a sex education issue.
It totally is. If you look in the grade 7 section, though, you'll see a little something called the teacher's prompt. And the teacher's prompt basically means if a student asks you this question, here's a little shorthand for you how to answer. And what it says there is basically if a kid asks you about the best way to avoid getting sexually transmitted infections, here's what you tell them. Abstain from oral sex. Abstain from vaginal sex. Abstain from anal sex. It says abstain. Wait until you're older. Wait until you're mature. And this is what your parents are supposed to be saying to kids too, apparently, right?
Well, parents don't teach their kids shit, right. And then they expect all of us to not care about their kids too.
Well, but they keep on preaching this message of abstinence.
Yeah, okay, because that's work.
Teachers, and it doesn't.
No.
But that's what it actually says in the curriculum. It actually says, wait until you're mature enough to make this decision safely. Wait until your partner is at the same level of maturity or above to make the decision to have sex safely. And I'll give you the exact quote, actually. The exact quote is, but having sex has risks too, including physical risks, like sexually transmitted infections, which are common and can hurt you, and getting pregnant when you don't want to. End quote. That's what it says. The first thing that the teachers are supposed to say to the students is abstinence. And then...
But it's education.
Right.
It's two words. Mm-hmm. Just because you have decided to fail your children doesn't mean you can endanger everybody else. Everybody else's.
But because they would rather sit around, or I'm sorry, I'm going to talk to you, the people listening to this podcast, because you would rather sit around and listen to AM radio and you want to read tabloid newspapers and you want to let other people do the heavy thinking for you. This is what happens. You know what else happens? Minimum wage gets frozen. Police violence is about to get a remix project. They're bringing Tavis back one way or the other.
Yeah.
The GM factory in Oshawa closes up shop. That's almost 3,000 people at the factory that are about to get thrown out of work. Plus, all of the people who work in the factories that supply all the parts to the Oshawa factory. Because the previous government was trying to incentivize green energy, and that's the direction automakers were moving in, green energy. And then this government cancels all the green energy project. And you know what that costs us? Tens of thousands of jobs and $5 billion out of our GDP. $5 billion. So I know you all in the audience were, you know, if you were around for the Bob Rae years, you've been around the block on this. You felt like your taxes were going up every year. Some of you were public servants. So you have bitter memories about those unforced paid days or the unpaid days off, the Rae days. At what point are you going to get that these people are conning you? And not only are they conning you, they're hurting us and everybody else and making this province a workplace. So can we not talk about this? Can we not find a way to work together as a community that doesn't involve you lashing out and getting us stuck with this, the most like ridiculous and stupid human beings you could possibly put in government? Because you don't like the idea of other people spending your money and you don't like the idea about kids learning about sex too early, which actually doesn't even happen. Gen X and the boomer generation, they had twice as many pregnancies as today's kids have. Twice as many. We have more population and half the number of pregnancies. Our kids are doing better.
They're finding ways to learn outside of their parents.
Outside of their parents, because their parents are getting in the way. You know, the kids are more educated than they've ever have been.
Yeah.
The kids now are doing better than their parents in school overall. Did you know that? Or did you just assume everything's getting worse? And you know who taught you to believe everything's getting worse? The same people that want you to pretend there's nothing wrong when a police officer stops your kid on the way from mosque or basketball practice to ask him where he's going and who he is. Or the one that wants to tell your daughter that she can't wear her natural hair to work in a retail store because it's not professional. Those are the same people that are trying to tell you that there's something wrong with our youth, and our youth are actually doing better than you were. So I'm just going to wrap this up. I'm going to ask you a question. What if you were wrong? Would you admit it? Like, would you try to do something about it if you were wrong? Would you write a letter to your MPP saying, hey, we don't agree with this, we're going to stop it? Would you pass the hat around at church and support people in the community that don't go to the same church that you do, that don't pray like you do? Or are you going to be stubborn and just do the same thing the next time around and hope something different happens? Because if it's option B, that means you are taking the same side as the people who are enemies to your children, the same people that want to see your children dead or in jail. And all I'm going to say is you should probably think long and hard about that. That's it. That's my tea. Mel, what's your tea for this week?
So my tea is basically like the big broader idea is that nobody listens to Black women, which is true. And I understand that we're living in an age where people get on Twitter and tweet about listening to Black women and then ignore Black women the next day.
Yep.
Or editors are retweeting things, especially here in Canada.
This is
and
so
like,
important.
From
Everyone
February
should read this.
1st to 28th, they're trying to get us to write something and then everything else is too Black media. We know that nobody listens to us and we don't actually have to tweet about it. Some of us don't even have to talk about it. Like, we actually live in this reality. And I just feel like there's a disconnect between what people feel like we're doing when nobody's listening to us. Like, they have to tell us that nobody's listening. Like, we already know.
Mm.
And so, I mean, I'm kind of situating this in the term misogynoir. I don't know if, like, everybody knows what that means. But it's basically misogyny directed towards Black women. And it's based on the intersectionality between gender and race.
Mm-hmm.
And it was coined by Moya Bailey. If you Google misogynoir, it is, like, you just see, like, you know, just how things are. And I just feel like it's not any situation we're existing where we don't feel this, as I said. So a couple weeks ago, I was on Instagram. I spend about half my life on that application. And I was on 6buzz TV. Do you know 6buzz TV?
I don't.
It's one of the biggest pages that we have in the city. It's supposed to represent Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, they have those, like, it's like jokes. And, like, I mean, our producer, Ryan, likes 6buzz TV because he's, like, really young. But old people like me like it too. So it's, like, fun. It's kind of like music, pop culture. It's like a Toronto thing, whatever. But it also kind of represents the worst of us. So anytime there's an opportunity to be misogynist or homophobic, like, every dude in the GTA who's under 5'7 needs to leave a comment. And it's just like, look, I come from a family of short people. I'm just, like, too tall.
Yeah,
I've always been too tall to deal with these things. So there was a post about, they just made a joke about, you know, there should be an International Men's Day, right?
But there is an International Men's Day.
Every day?
In addition to the fact that, you know, there's every day is Men's Day.
Yeah.
It just passed. It was like last week, wasn't it?
Was it actually the day?
Yeah, there was an actual International Men's
Day. I thought it was a joke. I thought it was that stupid that it was a joke.
No, they try to make it a joke, like, why isn't there white entertainment television or why isn't there white history month?
Yeah, but it was
International Men's Day. It is. But the funny thing is people who make that joke, well, why is there a Women's Day, not a Men's Day? But there is one. So where were you?
Oh, well, there shouldn't be one. So I guess that's what this post was about. So I was like, this is the dumbest. Okay, this is so whatever.
Yeah.
And then people were just like, you know, commenting back. The usual, like, Ashy, who hurt you, whatever. So I was just like, had time that morning. So I was like, your daddy hurt me. You know what I mean? And then they're like, oh, you know my dad? And I'm like, well, I will if you don't stop with me. So people were just like, you look like you're from another planet. I'm like, yeah, I am. Can you actually imagine having to, like, engage this? Like,
yeah.
I'm just like, why is it that when a woman says something that is even, like, peripherally empowering, it is so threatening to men, especially Black women? Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I constantly am reminded of, like, just this contempt. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. Like, you'll see it in, like, the Shade Room too. Like, they posted something today about how you know, gender-based violence and the most unsafe place for women is the home. And men had something to say. It's like, you're proving the point. So I just feel like whenever we have anything to say that has anything to do with us being empowered, people act as if, like, we're asking a question. We already know you hate us, right?
Mm.
So it kind of brings me to Do you watch Love and Hip Hop?
Yeah, Love and Hip Hop New York, the season that Cardi B was on, that was the last season I watched.
Oh, it was a while ago.
Yeah.
So this year, Joe Budden came back because he was on the show before. And now he's back. Yeah. And, you know, he's revamped his career. A lot of things have happened. A writer on Twitter named Benny Vieira, who's amazing, tweeted, "Are we ever going to address that Joe Budden beat Esther Baxter so bad that she had a miscarriage? Or that two of his other exes also said he beat them up. But, you know, the podcast. He has his new Revolt television show. He has a podcast that's really popular. And we're just supposed to ignore that this happened to a woman, a black woman, who was actually, like, she wasn't even really able to talk about it because of intimidation, because the hip-hop community is just never going to be there for us, period. Yeah. This man put it in his music. So in response to her tweet, a woman, because women and men were coming at her, but the charges were dropped. We can't even have a conversation about how these men just get to keep like reinvigorating their career, reinventing themselves. We can't even say one thing. And the first thing you're talking about is charges. In one of her responses, she said, when we're talking about that, they sound like the racists that they cry about. Don't even waste your time. Any other time the system is broken, right? But when it's abusive women, they use the same system to argue a man's innocence. They hate women and it's obvious. So it's just like, yeah, you hate us. Like, this is not a question. The energy that people invest to defend men that they don't know, because somebody on Twitter told me that, was I there? It's just like the statistics, the reality, the severe misogyny that we're living in. And you are still talking about, was I there? Like, you have a family. You're a woman. You probably know women in your life that this has happened to, but you would rather defend. Like, I don't understand where people think this is going to get them. It doesn't make men pick them. Men don't care. This is the way it works. If you even came close to applying that same energy to women, to black women, it would look so different. We don't have to do this. You don't have to do work for a man that is thriving. Why don't you do work for us? That's all I have to say. Thank you so much for listening. Shout out to Frequency Network for having us.
Thank you to our show producer, Ryan Clark.
And our music producer, Black Orchid.
You can catch me on Twitter at Andre Demise.
You can catch me at Melena Williams.
And Donovan Bennett's Twitter is at DONOVANBENNETT. Donovan Bennett.
You can listen to us on frequencypodcastnetwork.com.
Or on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And don't forget to rate the show on iTunes.
Give us that 5-star rating. And if you're feeling really generous, like really, really generous, and you like us, leave us a written review, please.
See you next week.
Bye.